my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me the hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Hey everyone, welcome back once again to my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast, and I believe this is episode 44, and I should know that. I don't have my stats pulled up in front of me right now, but I'm pretty sure this is episode 44, and it's what the hell, so that's appropriate because I don't know what the hell I'm talking about at the moment, but I do know the focus of the topic today is Hell in a Cell. We're still about a month or so away, but the one match that has been announced, Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar, inside the cell, we're going to talk about that. And by we, I, of course, mean Chad Smart, my main man, out in parts unknown. And Chad, how's it going? And you're going to actually be at this Hell in a Cell pay-per-view.
That is correct, yes. SummerSlam has been in parts unknown, as we say, for the last, I believe, 5 or 6 years. But this year, with the move to New York, or the New York area, We instead get Hell in a Cell, so it's something new, and I would like to say that I'm looking forward to the show. However, that's not entirely true, and we will get more into that.
Yeah, we'll talk about this year's event in a couple minutes, but we're going to kind of do a little backtracking, a little history, if you will. Unbeknownst to each of us at the time, we were both at the very first Hell in a Cell match, which was held at the Bad Blood pay-per-view in your house, Bad Blood, in St. Louis, Missouri, back in October 1997. It was Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker, and of course that was the debut of Kane that night as well. And here we are now, what is that, 18 years later, The Undertaker still participating in that type of matchup. But Chad, you've been to a couple of other Hell in a Cell events as well.
Well, I've been to one other Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, and that was last year's, which I'm actually, as we record this, I'm watching again and realizing that I must have taken a 3-hour nap during the show because I don't remember much of anything that happened. And then, as you pointed out to me last year, I also saw Undertaker versus Triple H at WrestleMania 28, was it?
I believe it was 28.
Yes. So, the only thing I remember about that match is I believe I got nachos during that one. So, that was the highlight.
I should be wearing my Gorilla Monsoon Will You Stop shirt today because I have a feeling I'm going to be saying that a lot. But, we've also, I think we do agree on this, as far as the specialty pay-per-views, I don't think either one of us are enormous fans of them. I don't mind the Hell in a Cell concept, but I liked back in the early days when it was a specialty attraction and it was used very sporadically throughout the course of building up feuds and whatnot. I think, you know, it's kind of become one of those things that we've come to expect, and it's you know, we're getting at least two of them a year now with this pay-per-view alone.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, I think this year the Undertaker-Lesnar match actually makes sense and plays into the Hell in a Cell match a little bit, given their history and given that this is their third match in a feud. Although, watching last year's show, right now John Cena is taking on Randy Orton. Winner gets a future shot at Brock Lesnar when he was champion, and I don't know why this is a match taking place inside of the cell, and I think that's been the biggest problem with these specialty pay-per-views, is that oftentimes you have to have a match, because it is the name of the pay-per-view, you have to have that type of match, even though the feud doesn't call for it.
Right, and now, refresh my memory, who won that match?
Cena and Orton?
Yeah.
Well, it's still going on, and as I said, I don't remember.
You were there, brother.
I don't remember that much about it. I believe I want to say it was Cena, and then he got his match at the Royal Rumble.
Okay, that's right. He did wrestle at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, because I know Lesnar didn't wrestle at Survivor Series, and I doubt that he was on the TLC pay-per-views.
Okay, that makes sense. Well, I mean, I understand it. I don't necessarily think it makes sense. But, you know, for me, and I think we've talked about this before in the past, I don't know about on the podcast, but I know on the blog at my123cents.com, for me, the Hell in a Cell, my favorite Hell in a Cell matchup of all time is, and it's probably the one that everybody talks about still to this day, is Mick Foley or Mankind versus The Undertaker at King of the Ring 1998. And there are a couple reasons why. I mean, obviously the action, the spot off the top, you know, getting fully getting thrown off the top of the cell and through the announce table. And I get that this is all kind of the where he got that stuntman stereotype, if you will, whatever you want to call it. I thought it was a good match. It made sense that it was inside the Hell in a Cell. They had such a history against each other. And also just the commentary from Jim Ross and the reactions that Jerry Lawler was giving during the course of the match, it really, as a fan, brought me into it, and I was emotionally invested in it, and I can still remember that match still, 16, 17 years later. Now, going back to the very first one that we were in the audience for, and I have a bad habit of this, of not going back and rewatching things that I was a fan, you know, that I was a part of or was at for. I have not rewatched Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. It was a good match, obviously. I mean, you've got two of the top guys in the business going at it inside this new concept of a match, but I haven't gone back and watched it. Chad, what is your take and what's been your favorite Hell in a Cell match?
Well, really, I think there's only one legitimate answer for the best Hell in a Cell, and that is obviously Big Boss Man versus Al Snow.
That technically wasn't in a cell, though. That was a kennel match, wasn't it? They had dogs running around.
Kennel from Hell. So it was a steel cage inside a Hell in a Cell with dogs.
I had forgotten about that until you just brought it up again.
Dogs who were supposed to be fierce attack dogs, but they were, let's say they attacked each other in a non-attacking way.
Were they having coitus?
They were having coitus, yes.
As Sheldon Cooper would say?
Yes, they were having caninus coitus interruptus. I think most people would say the Undertaker-Mankind match is probably the best Hell in a Cell. And unfortunately, as we were discussing earlier with the theme pay-per-views, there have been so many random Hell in a Cell matches now that it's hard for me to even remember what matches have been fought inside the cell over the last 5 years. As far as the original, I have gone back and watched it, I think, a couple times over the last, like you said, 18 years.
Yeah.
However many, 18 years. Yeah, I think I've watched it a few times, and it's, it was a match that made the show. Otherwise, that show would have been a pretty nothing show overall. The only other notable event from that show, of course, was the untimely passing of Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
The Hell in a Cell, I mean, for being the first match, having no idea what to expect, especially when Shawn and Taker went to the top of the cage and battled, there, that was something you just had never seen before. And I think one of the problems with the Cell matches these days is that it's become like the go-to move. And I believe later on in last year's Hell in a Cell between Dean Ambrose and Rollins, I believe they go to the top of the cage, either at the very beginning or at some point during, and I think it's much like a ladder match. I think the key right now is coming up with new ways to use the cell.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of segueing to the Brock Taker match, I think that match will be more of just a physical brawl where the cage is occasionally used as a weapon, not so much as a platform. That makes sense. Like it's just there, I guess, to keep Heyman out, which I don't think Heyman has really been that involved in Lesnar's matches. I don't see anybody interfering to get to Taker any other reason or to get to Lesnar. So, other than their history, I don't know why this is being in a cell. You know, because usually in the past, the cage match, the purpose of the cage match was to either keep someone from running away or keep someone from interfering. But now we're just at a point now, especially in certain wrestling promotions, where a cage match is about as standard as a tag team match. It's just something that happens.
Yeah, and to date, once we get to Hell in a Cell on October 25th, we will have had our 31st Hell in a Cell match with Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker. Presumably, there will be another one happening that night, so potentially 32. Of course, The Undertaker still... thank you, World Wide Web, for this information, by the way. The Undertaker still holds the number for the most appearances and victories, although he's tied with Triple H for the most victories at 6. Undertaker has been in 12 Hell in a Cell matches. This will obviously be lucky or unlucky number 13 for him. Triple H has been in 9, Shawn Michaels 4, Randy Orton 6, and Batista has been in 2, and he is 2-0 in Hell in a Cell matches. By the way, Mick Foley, who we talked about earlier, is 0-4 in the Hell in a Cell. Paul Heyman, by the way, has a match in 1 as well, 0-1, having lost to CM Punk when he teamed up with Ryback back in 2013. And by the way, your kennel match is not listed on the Hell in a Cell list here. Just
yeah, I know. It's technically a kennel from Hell match, which is different.
But
how many times do you get the chance to talk about Al Snow on this podcast?
This is true. But Big Boss Man did wrestle a Hell in a Cell against The Undertaker at WrestleMania 15, I believe it was.
Yes, that's where Undertaker killed him.
Yeah.
And then he came back the next night. It was okay. So
it was all good. They had to bring him back, of course.
You know, Bossman had a tendency to just hang around WWE for a while.
Oh, will you stop? Man, I'm getting started already. Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the whole, our thoughts and feelings on Hell in a Cell and past Hell in a Cell matches. Obviously, we are still almost a month out until this year's event, so there's only been the one match that we talked about and announced. But of course, and we don't like to speculate a lot, but we have seen where there might be some of these other matches. And we won't go through all of them, Chad, and I think that probably the other one that's going to end up inside the cell is going to be Kane versus Seth Rollins, don't you think? Or which one would you put in there?
I mean, if they do two matches, like I guess they have in the past, I would probably say the rumored Wyatt family versus the Shield and Randy Orton match. Just because that would be a different dynamic of having six men battling at once inside a cage instead of doing two singles matches. And with the history of the Shield versus the Wyatt family, it could make sense.
I would rather it be that. I agree. I agree with that philosophy.
Yeah, personally, I would. If the match happens, I would like to see the Charlotte versus Nikki versus Paige inside the cell. Just because if we're gonna have a Divas Revolution, let's give them a cell match and let them prove they're just as good as the guys at working with steel.
I think you're being sarcastic, but I mean, I think that could actually, that would be an interesting concept too, to put the...
Well, in that way you could also keep out the other members of the factions.
Yeah.
So, it'd be interesting to see too, but I don't know. I mean, personally, I think they should just keep it to Lesnar Taker. I think when you start having multiple matches inside it, devalues the concept even further. It's kind of like when TNA has their lockdown pay-per-view and every match is inside a steel cage.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, not every match is designed for the steel cage and doing it all. To go more snark mode, it's kind of like when you watch an indie wrestling show and every match gets a "this is awesome" chant.
Mm-hmm.
If everything is the same, then nothing stands out. So nothing then becomes awesome by whatever transfers property that is.
And I agree with you. And I'll throw out the argument that I've made in the past. I mean, you watch the Royal Rumble for the one Royal Rumble match. Now, if they decided to throw in, they would certainly have the numbers to do a second Battle Royal type match on that show. I mean, you know, I agree with you. I think that there should just be one, and it should, you know, they can end the show with Lesnar and Undertaker, and I don't think it's a horrible thing. Now, you've been obviously there on these shows where they've had two Hell in a Cell matches. So how do they the cell just raises and lowers, doesn't it? It's not a lot of setup.
No, yeah, it's hanging from the ceiling. And so they'll just lower it down and fight their match and then raise it back up at the end.
That makes me, I don't know, I just get nervous if I were sitting underneath that or in that area where, I mean, I'm usually far enough back that it's not a concern, but I don't know.
So far, 32 matches, and so far, nothing has happened.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, let's talk about Brock and The Undertaker. Let's backtrack a little bit, though. Obviously, these two have a history. 2002, I think it was, and I've already forgotten the name of the pay-per-view, but they did battle in a Hell in a Cell. Brock was the champion.
Yeah, No Mercy.
No Mercy. You went back, I think we both went back and watched this last night. Undertaker bleeds a lot.
Yeah.
Lesnar bleeds. Now, was Heyman... I looked up at one point and Heyman was bleeding.
Yeah, Heyman bleeds. I think at one point even Michael Cole was bleeding.
Oh, man. So, I don't know why I find that so funny. There's a history here. And then, of course, the most recent history being at WrestleMania 30... about 18 months ago, Brock Lesnar...
That was so devastating to Undertaker that it took him 18 months to realize he was mad and wanted revenge.
Yeah, and let's talk about that. What do you make of that? Why do you think... I mean, obviously, 2014 was the year of Lesnar in terms of, you know, beating the streak, going on and kicking John Cena's ass and dominating that match and winning the WWE Championship and then going on forward with that and just full steam ahead... I think it worked in terms of not tying him back to The Undertaker if they were going to do this 50-50 booking that they ended up doing with SummerSlam this year. But also, at the same time, yeah, it does look weird that The Undertaker comes back, wrestles Bray Wyatt at this year's WrestleMania, and then comes back a few months later and says, oh yeah, by the way, I want Brock. I think they should have kept him out of WrestleMania this year.
I agree, and I also think if he was mad at Brock beating the streak, it would have made more sense. Not that I would have wanted to see it anymore, but it would have made more sense for him to wrestle again at WrestleMania, which was kind of like the hallowed ground of Undertaker, and prove that the match was a fluke.
Mm-hmm.
Beating Lesnar on another show, I don't understand the meaning. I don't get why. Like, oh, he beat him at SummerSlam, so that equals Lesnar beating him at WrestleMania where he had never lost. I don't see the reasoning behind it.
Well, and also, too, I mean, and I don't know, I watch some of the highlights, I don't sit there and examine Raw like I used to, but, you know, they ended that match so oddly with The Undertaker clearly being seen on camera tapping out of the referee's view, though.
Yeah.
Are they making something out of this or not? I mean, I don't get where that the whole point of all that was.
I think that was just a dusty finish. You make it look like Taker lost, and then the referee says, "Oh no, I didn't see this," or whatever. And just I don't understand the booking either, and I don't know. I also think, too, that with given how limited Brock Lesnar is as to appearing on shows, having him fight the same people more than once is a waste of his appearance.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that eventually Brock Lesnar needs to be in there with someone who's going to beat him, who can then get that rub and go on, because if you look at his opponents that he's had since coming back in 2012, you know, he wrestled CM Punk, he's wrestled John Cena, he's wrestled Seth Rollins now, I guess, Triple H, Big Show, and The Undertaker. And I guess he killed Kofi Kingston at the show in Japan. But it's like, established superstars, you know, Triple H and John Cena early on beating him did nothing for their careers, and it did nothing for Brock Lesnar, obviously, either.
Yeah.
But it needs to be someone like a Seth Rollins or a Dean Ambrose or Roman Reigns or my guy Neville that ends up beating Brock Lesnar to get that rub to move on to the next level. Now, I don't know how much longer Brock has with the WWE. I don't know what
the... He signed a three-year contract, didn't he, right before WrestleMania?
Was it 3 years? I knew he signed right before WrestleMania, but I wasn't sure the length.
But I don't know how many appearances. But you know, I was reading something earlier today where, kind of talking about the same thing, and it said, you know, it would have made sense to keep Rusev strong, and then maybe next year at WrestleMania have Rusev beat Lesnar.
Yeah.
And so then you have this new kind of dominant force, and even with Lesnar still around, but you have another person who's going to be there more often than Brock. And I think, I mean, we can segue off on this and have an entire podcast about how WWE is not making any credible new stars because of the parody booking, because of the reluctance to put them over any established star and all that. But I agree with you. I think Lesnar could be used more to help elevate. But at the same time, he is such a force that maybe it is better to put him in with guys who are kind of bulletproof if he's going to be winning all the time.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, you and I at least I know I have jumped to a huge conclusion and have made a giant assumption that Hell in a Cell is going to be the final encounter between these two, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's true, although there's also new speculation on social media, and again, you know what we think about speculation, but I'm not seeing Lesnar Undertaker being talked about as a rematch at WrestleMania, which to me is a good thing.
Yeah.
For all the reasons that we've already talked about. Do you think that Hell in a Cell, is this the final chapter in this saga between these two?
I think it should be. I think three matches is definitely enough to carry the feud, and given their history, I believe, and I'm just saying this without research, I believe Taker beating Lesnar at SummerSlam was the first time Undertaker has beaten Lesnar.
I think you are correct in that.
So, in that regard, I don't understand why Lesnar would want to keep fighting, especially if Lesnar ends up winning the Hell in a Cell match. Like, even if Taker keeps coming back, he should just be like, no, I'm done with you, move on.
So, who do you... I'm going to put you on the spot. Who do you think will win this match?
I think Lesnar needs to.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Lesnar needs to, otherwise beating the streak seems even more pointless.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Lesnar's legacy will be that he was the bane of the Undertaker's existence. I mean, I think it's fair to say he has been Undertaker's toughest opponent to date.
I agree.
And that's obviously, you know, when they first brought Brock back in, I think they kind of, I don't know that they knew what to do with him, and that's why we were seeing him lose to Triple H and lose to John Cena. And I like what they've done with him. I like Brock Lesnar this time around much more than I did when he was a first WWE superstar, quite honestly. And I know that a lot of people are probably banging their heads against the wall when I say that. But, you know, I was not a huge Lesnar fan. I would say that I am a bigger fan of him now. And he's arguably, now that Daniel Bryan is on the shelf, he's arguably the company's biggest
draw
right now, and biggest, or at least the biggest, I don't know if the word face is right, but he's the most popular guy on the card, I would say.
Yeah, I'd agree with you.
So, where do you go from here with these guys after Hell in a Cell? Say, you know, whomever wins, we both think or believe that Brock should win. Say Brock wins. Undertaker, I don't think is done yet. I think that he will come back and do a match at 32. Where do you lead these two guys after Hell in a Cell?
I think I would do another Rollins versus Lesnar match, possibly at Survivor Series, and give Rollins the definitive victory to help kind of solidify his title reign, you know, and make him a champion. And Undertaker, I would, you know, personally, I would like to see them WrestleMania 32 be Undertaker's retirement match. And so I would probably put him in the ring against Kane just because of that history. And I think them having the farewell match would kind of make sense. And it would also be a two guys in a view that you don't really need a storyline built up to, and it keeps them from interfering or being involved with anybody else that I have more interest in watching, honestly. Or, you know, I think maybe you take Lesnar and do something completely different with him. Have Heyman form a tag team with Lesnar, and, you know, you could either bring in some other powerhouse or maybe give him, just throwing a random name on it, someone like Neville to do a, you know, the newfound power and glory type dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And just have Lesnar kind of then take over the tag scene for a while. You know, when he first started out in OVW, he and Shelton Benjamin were the Minnesota Stretching Crew, I believe. And, you know, that's something, as I said, that's something different, something we haven't seen from Lesnar. I don't know. But then you're looking at saddling some guy's a tag team partner with a partner who's not going to be around. So I don't know. But I definitely think a Rollins-Lesnar rematch is in the cards somewhere down the line.
Now, when you say a definitive win for Rollins, do you mean that Rollins goes over clean, or does he do his heel shtick and comes up with an underhanded pinfall victory over Lesnar?
It could be either or. It just has to be Rollins getting the victory on his own. Like, not having Cena come in and give Lesnar an attitude adjustment behind the referee's back, not having the authority interfere. Rollins can cheat. You know, he can use the belt as a weapon or a chair or whatever, but I think Rollins needs to get the pinfall.
I agree with you. I hope that that's what happens, because I do think that Rollins needs that little bit of... he's obviously got the goods, but he needs that little bit of, you know, that victory over someone like Brock Lesnar that would solidify and make it all legit, so to speak. So, any other speculation or buzz about Hell in a Cell you want to discuss?
You know, just based on the card that I've seen, we've kind of briefly touched on, I can say this for just about every single WWE show, I wish they would figure out a new way to do shows that aren't 75% rematches from the previous month. Because then you also get those matches on the weekly shows. I think the creative aspect of WWE really needs an overhaul. But as far as the show itself, I think, again, based on what was rumored, I think it has the potential to be a solid wrestling show. We'll see how the booking helps or hinders. And as I'm watching last year's Hell in a Cell, which, by the way, John Cena did win after a super attitude adjustment through a table, but right now I'm watching Sheamus versus The Miz, and I really think Damian Sandow needs to come back to television. I know the Meta Powers tag team was cut short by Hulk Hogan's situation, but I don't know why he hasn't been back on TV.
He's back though on the house show circuit, isn't he?
Yeah, I believe he's been. He's kind of gone back to his old original gimmick. Again, I'm segueing and I'm going off on totally non-relevant topics. I think WWE just has so many guys not being utilized right now that it's sad that we get the same segments every single week on television.
No, I mean, that's a valid point because, you know, that's how fans get tired of and bored with the product, because you are putting out 52 weeks of original programming, three times a week, and then throwing in pay-per-views and these other specials and whatnot that they've been doing. And you're right. There are, you know, you've mentioned Damian Sandow, but then you look at Curtis Axel, David Otunga, Heath Slater. I'm just thinking of a few guys just off the top of my head that you don't see anymore, or you haven't seen in quite some time, and, you know, there's really no reason for it.
Yeah. I'm with you. This is one of those times where I really want to would like to be able to sit down with Vince or Stephanie and just ask them why. We were talking about Austin's podcast earlier because Brock Lesnar is going to be on the October podcast special.
Yeah.
Which I believe is on the 15th or the 19th, whichever one of those days would be a Monday. But, when they did the first one with Vince, and I can't remember the exact wording of the question, but it was something about treating Lesnar like a special attraction, and Vince said, you don't want to see him every week because you would get tired of him. I really wish Austin would have followed it up with, why then do we see the same thing week after week?
Yeah, they really do, and we are segueing here into something different, but we've talked about Hell in a Cell. They do have that ability to, they've got the depth on their roster. And I think it also keeps guys healthier and gals.
People out. There's no reason to use the same people over and over. Like you said, especially with the rash of injuries, over the last few years, give guys every 3 months, give a guy 2 to 3 weeks off. Let them kind of rest up and spend time at home if they have families or whatever or not. I don't know. These are all things when you and I, start our own, when we take over GFW.
I hope Jeff's not listening. I'm sure he's not.
Or when we take over TNA. Let's, speaking of TNA real quick.
Yeah.
Let's segue, because I believe Bound for Glory is next Sunday. Yeah, TNA's still doing pay-per-views.
Yeah, right? You're right. October 3rd or 4th, I believe. Yeah.
I don't know if you've kept up with TNA.
Very little. I read the results. I see some of the highlights, but I don't, because I don't have Destination America here.
Okay, well, I sent you this question and you didn't respond this week, so I'm going to get your answer now.
Okay.
So over the last month and a half, TNA on their Impact show has ran this angle with GFW invading and trying to take over. And last week they had, episode before, they had a Lethal Lockdown match, winner takes all, with TNA winning and getting control back of TNA whatever that actually means. But then they announced on Thursday before Impact aired that at Bound for Glory, the Wolves, Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards, they would be defending the TNA tag team titles against Trevor Lee and Brian Myers, formerly Kurt Hawkins in WWE, who are GFW wrestlers and not TNA wrestlers. So why, if they just had this feud that is now over and GFW was out, are GFW guys getting a tag team title shot on what is technically TNA's WrestleMania?
That's a good question.
Now, and don't just say it's because it's TNA. Just I really want a logical answer to this question. I should tweet Dixie.
You should tweet Dixie, but have they... Do they have any other matches with global guys against TNA guys?
The only thing that I can think of that they've announced are Gail Kim versus Awesome Kong, I think, for the women's title, and Drew Galloway won a six-man elimination match to get a title shot against EC3. And I believe those are the only matches announced.
Is Drew Galloway, is that...
Drew McIntyre.
Okay, that's what I thought. And he's Global Force, right?
No, he's TNA.
He is TNA now, okay. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's... I don't have an answer other than it's
I'm looking
TNA.
To see if they've announced anything else. But yeah, it just seems...
Now, Dixie has acknowledged, too, correct me if I'm wrong, that there is no TV deal in place for 2016. Is that right?
That is I believe that is the current status. Yeah, Destination America will keep them on the air through the end of the year. And, I mean, that whole situation just is very... it's very odd. The fact that, I believe... Impact gets the highest ratings, but for some reason, highest ratings on Destination America, but I guess the cost of airing it is not productive to what Destination America is paying to have the show.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I really don't know where they're going to go.
Interesting.
Yeah, where they're going to go from here, because I don't know what station would be willing to have wrestling on, and it's also just, I'm sorry, I'm trying to find anything on their website about Bound for Glory, and here's, right, this has gone from Hell in a Cell to me bashing TNA, it's TNA's getting back on the road after like a year and a half not doing shows. But they have events scheduled October 29th, October 30th, 31st, and November 1st. Why would you do shows on Halloween? And maybe I'm just coming from this from a different perspective of, you know, out here, Halloween is a huge deal and there's a huge party. I would imagine the kids would be out trick-or-treating. I just don't understand why you would do a show.
Is it a daytime show?
I do not believe so.
Mm.
Okay, here we go. So far, according to their website, you have Drew Galloway versus EC3, which, I mean, I like EC3, and I think, especially in light of them not having television after this, after this year, apparently, I would keep the title on EC3, just... because I don't see the point of giving the title to a champion that, I mean, it'd be kind of like when WWE ECW went off the air, and I believe it was Ezekiel Jackson won the title on the very last show.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, so, and then you have the Wolves versus Trevor Lee and Brian Myers, Gail Kim versus Awesome Kong, and an Ultimate X match, because it's TNA, you have to have a gimmick match on every show. Tigre Uno is defending the X Division against three unknown competitors at this time. So that's 3.5 matches announced 1 week before your show is happening.
Now, do they, and they do that live, right? Because I know that they've gone to the taped concept for a lot of their stuff.
Yeah, Glory will be live.
Okay.
We'll go through, I believe, standard pay-per-view operators or through the TNA website.
And I assume you will not be ordering that one.
That is probably a good option, yes. I believe I have other commitments next Sunday.
So. Okay. I'm going to put you on the spot. We're going to end the show on a high note, so tell me the best thing you saw this past week, either at a wrestling show, you know, online, read about, heard about. Put something over in the world of professional wrestling that made you happy and excited to be a fan. And you can't say reading my blog.
I have to think of what wrestling stuff that I saw or...
Well, I'll let you think, and I'm going to talk about mine. I actually had an interview with a young indie guy who was up and coming, who I think is really going to be making a difference in the world of professional wrestling on a national level. What's that?
Was it Fatu?
No, it was not Fatu. His name is Daniel Eads, and unfortunately, there were some technical difficulties with the equipment. His end, my end, I'm not sure whose, but... I'm going to get to meet him in person here in a couple of weeks and talk to him at a show coming up. So that podcast will happen with Daniel Eads. People here in Southern Illinois and in the Midwest probably have heard of him and seen him before. I'm thinking that you're going to see him on a national scene probably sometime in 2016, if not, well, not sooner than that. But I definitely think that this kid is going places, and I am looking forward to the opportunity to talk to him face-to-face and actually see him wrestle in person as well. So now, what's your good news for the week?
You know, I don't really have any, and I'm gonna twist it.
That's fine.
I can say the New Day are probably the most entertaining thing in WWE right now. And NXT was fine, but I don't recall anything really standing out.
Mm-hmm.
Impact. Did I watch? I had Impact on, but I wasn't really watching it. I can't remember in all the news that has come out this week. This is not necessarily a good thing, but it's something that I never touched on because of my laziness in writing and never got around to it. But and it's actually a couple weeks old now. Ultramantis Black, the leader of the Neo Solar Temple in Chikara, unfortunately had to, as of right now, retire due to some leg injuries that he has sustained over the last couple months. And when I saw him at King of Trios a few weeks ago, Devastation Corporation took his crutches and beat him up and attacked the leg some more, which is probably what led to the retirement. But I just think hopefully he will stick around Chikara as a manager or commentator. And it's... he is one of those characters that I don't know what his life outside of Chikara deals with, and I don't know what the Chikara booking arrangements are. I know he did a couple of indie shows a few years ago, but he's mainly just been a Chikara devotee.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he is, and I'm sure the character itself, if you took it and put it in WWE, fans would not get it, because it's just such, it's not that wacky, it's just, I don't think it's in the realistic world of WWE, I don't know if it would fly. But Ultramantis is one of the main reasons that I got into Chikara 10 years ago, and he is just a great character that, like I said, hopefully he will stick around as a character. It's really sad that injuries have cut his career short. He was, he and Halo Wicked and Icarus are the only Chikara Gen 1 originals still left. I'm really curious to see where he goes, especially since Chikara has this Challenge of the Immortals series going on, which he was the captain of the one of the teams, and how his being out, how that will affect their standing. Yeah, so I just want to give props to Ultra Mantis for being such a such a creative character that helped strengthen the Jakar product.
Okay, you saved it at the end there. I was going to give you about a 3 out of 10 on that, but I'll give you a 7.5.
You put me on the spot.
I did put you on the spot, so next time you'll know. When we're being snarky about stuff, we'll end it on a high note.
Okay. Well, hopefully there will be high notes to end it on.
Yes, exactly. Well, I know we'll talk before Hell in a Cell, and I'm sure once you've been there and seen the show live and in person, we'll want to get your reactions to that, I think. But we'll, I kid, but we will, we'll definitely catch up again soon with Chad. And as always, folks, thanks so much for listening to My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. Be sure to share this with your friends and family. Talk to you later.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.